test of the emergency broadcast system. Had there been an actual emergency, your local station, in conjunction with the relevant federal authorities, would have broadcast the following pre-recorded announcement.
This is Swagged Out Scholars Radio. We are broadcasting from Quilombo Academic and Cultural Institute in Atlanta, Georgia.
My name is Ajama Ikoro, and on behalf of Quilombo Academic and Cultural Institute, we would like to welcome you to Swagged Out Scholars Radio. And first, these headlines.
Union City police shot and killed a 19-year-old teen. Arison Waiters on Wednesday evening, December 14, 2011. There are conflicting reports between the officers and the eyewitnesses about what happened. One eyewitness said there was a fight and the police were called. When Waiters saw the police, he ran because he had a warrant out for his arrest. The witness said the officer shot him as he was running away. They rode up, one jumped out of the car, and one drove around to the backside of our complex, and there was a pow. Walter Poindetter said, the police have a different story. During a foot chase, one of the suspects got into a physical altercation with the officer and the officer shot him, Union City Police Detective Gloria Hodgson said. A witness named Ty said everyone in the area saw the same thing. Everyone out here could tell that you didn't see that man fight the officer, he said. Waiters was taken to Grady Hospital where he was pronounced dead. Waiters' grandmother was in tears. They didn't have to shoot him. They didn't have to shoot my grandson, she said. Immediately following the shooting, the GBI should have been contacted to conduct the interviews away from and independent of Union City Police, said Mawuli Mel Davis, who is the attorney for the Waiters family.
As parents, we do not expect to bury our children. We expect for them to bury us. So this sister has to do the unthinkable and bury her son. And it's all because this officer did not recognize his humanity.
That's right.
That was a human being that was running. That wasn't an animal. That wasn't game to be shot.
The following day after Waiters' shooting, CBS Atlanta tracked down two eyewitnesses who said they saw the entire shooting take place. He kept running and the officer shot, said the eyewitness. He was trying to still be in motion and run, and the officer shot again. According to spokeswoman Detective Gloria Hodgson, a group of teens ran from the scene after the officers arrived. Waiters died before an ambulance even arrived. Waiters' friends also told a different story. He had nothing to do with it. They say he had a gun, tried to fight the police, whatever, but none of that happened, Alan Mitchell said. A police officer ran behind the house, snuck behind the house, and just shot that man. Didn't tell him to stop or nothing. He didn't even know he was behind him, said Brianna Foots. Waiters leaves behind a young daughter. Waiters' mom is now planning two funerals. She lost a second son several days before Wednesday night's shooting. Union City Police called in the GBI to investigate the shooting, which is standard police procedure in an officer-involved shooting. This is Ilana Akil reporting for SOS Radio.
And from Nigeria, in the wee hours of Monday 16th, January 2012, the series of strikes and mass protests called Occupy Nigeria for the most part came to a grinding and anticlimactic end. Just when the mass protests were reaching an unprecedented crescendo, the labor unions NLC and TUC, which formed only a subset of the Occupy Nigeria movement, entered into an agreement behind closed doors with government, and the rest, as they say, is history. While this was incredibly disappointing to those who had high hopes for its potential, as it signaled a growing democratic deficit, others are of the opinion that some gains have been made in terms of political participation and mobilization for our democracy. An obvious gain is the rise of youth movements, both online and offline, their influence and their strength. Occupy Nigeria movement and loose coalition of various individual and civil society groups was a spontaneous movement that began on the 1st of January 2012. In the response to the fuel price increase by the executive arm of the Nigerian government, for the most part, Occupy Nigeria started online with Facebook, Twitter, and other social media used as outlets for people to express their outrage and as platforms for organizing and mobilizing people for street protests. It was individuals and coalition of youth groups, such as Enough is Enough, EIE, from all over Nigeria, from Lagos to Abuja, Kano to Kwara, Kaduna to Ibadan, and in the diaspora who discussed, mobilized, organized protests, shared information with one another mostly online and offline as well. This served as an opportunity for youths, who constitute over 70% of the population, who had hitherto been alienated and marginalized, from political discourse, discussion, and participation in the Nigerian public sphere to register their relevance and make their voices heard. Furthermore, the spontaneity of the Occupy movement as an embodiment of collective outrage felt by Nigerians meant it was representative of the feelings of ordinary Nigerian youths at home and in the diaspora. The movement cut across the country's mainstream divisions and fault lines. Muslim and Christian, Northerners and Southerners, Hausa, Yorubas and Igbos, Nigerians at home and abroad, men and women, students, graduates and workers, etc. By collectively expressing our outrage, Nigerian youth realize that the labels we have been tagged with are superficial as we all have the same needs. We are all demanding better governance and transparency from our leaders and are all troubled by the rising insecurity in the country. The brutal repression of peaceful protesters by security forces at the behest of government portends the greatest danger to our democracy. Over 20 protesters were reported to have been shot and killed by police in Lagos, Kano, Ilorin, and other cities, while many more sustained injuries. A very disturbing aspect of it all is the deployment of the army to Lagos, and to a lesser extent in Kaduna, allegedly to quell protests. There were reports of use of tear gas and other acts of repression on those who had continued with the protests beyond 9th January, when strikes were called off by labor unions. This was perceived by many civil society groups and activists as a breach of fundamental rights to freedom of expression and peaceful assembly. This is Salima Ikoro reporting for SOS Radio.
Hey, black child, do you know who you are, who you really are? Do you know you can be what you want to be if you try to be what you can be? Hey, black child, do you know where you're going, where you're really going? Do you know you can learn what you want to learn if you try to learn what you can't learn? Hey, black child, do you know you are strong? I mean, really strong. Do you know you can do what you want to do if you try to do what you can do? Say, hey, black child. Be what you can be, learn what you must learn, do what you must do, and tomorrow your nation will be what you want it to be, what you want it to be.
We dedicate this show to all the young freedom fighters who sacrificed their youth so we can have ours. Four little girls, Eddie Mae Collins, Carol Robinson, Denise McNair, Cynthia Wesley, we remember you. On Sunday, September 15, 1963, a white man was seen getting out of a white and blue Chevrolet car and placing a box under the steps of the 16th Street Baptist Church. At 10:22 a.m., the bomb exploded, killing Denise McNair, only 11, Eddie Mae Collins, 14, Carol Robinson, 14, and Cynthia Wesley, 2014. The four girls had been attending Sunday school classes at the church. 23 other people were also hurt by the blast. Civil rights activists blamed George Wallace, the governor of Alabama, of the killings. Only a week before the bombing, he told the New York Times that to stop integration, Alabama needed a few first-class funerals. A witness identified Robert Chambliss, a member of the Ku Klux Klan, as the man who placed the bomb under the steps of the 16th Street Baptist Church. He was arrested and charged with the murder of possessing a box of 122 sticks of dynamite without a permit. On October 8, 1963, Chambliss was found not guilty of the murder and received a $100 fine and a 6-month jail sentence for having the dynamite. The case was unsolved until Billy Baxley was elected Attorney General of Alabama. He requested the original FBI investigation files on the case and discovered that the organization had gathered a great deal of evidence against Chambliss that had not been used in the original trial.
Protect the sun in heaven. We are at war with the universe. The sky is falling, and the only thing that can save us now is sensitivity.
But sometime that tragedy means it's over. Soldier from the Academy League of Rollers, I deny being down, though they seem to hold us. My shoulders are strong, I prove I'm wrong. I ain't doing nothing but moving on. Let the truth be known. But they talk that freedom matters and didn't even leave a ladder.
I work at the corner store. We all got problems, problems. No one's gonna fly down low. No one's gonna save us now. How you feel? You're not alone. We're all just jealous, jealous. We don't reach the sky no more. We just can't overcome more.
Not around, the luck so gone. Don't ask me what's wrong, ask me what's right, and I'ma tell you what's life. And did you know I lost everything, but I ain't the only one. First came the hurricane, then the morning sun. Excuse me if I'm on one, and don't trip if I'm one. I walk a tight one, they try to tell me keep my eyes open. My whole city underwater, some people still floating, and they wonder why black people still voting. Cause your president's still joking. Take away the football team, the basketball team. Now all we got is me to represent New Orleans. Shit. No governor, no help from the mayor. Just a steady beating heart and a wish and a prayer. Let's pray.
These friends, they come and go. But I got family, family. These kids so fast they grow. They learn so quickly now. But there's nowhere to go. But there's no future, future. Don't make the scene so low. And we can't overcome it all.
From under that water, then there's fresh air. Just breathe, baby, God's got a blessing to spare. Yes, I know the process is so much stress, but it's the progress that feels the best. Cause I came from the project straight to success. And you're next, so try it, can't steal your pride, it's inside. Then find it and keep on grinding. Cause in every dark cloud there's a silver lining. I know. Yeah. 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 See, right now we just riding on love. A shot in the dark. We ain't trying to do nothing but hit the heart. We need love. That's all, y'all. That's all. Yeah. Born right here in the USA. But through the tragedy, looked on by the whole world as a refugee. So accept my emotion. Do not take it as an offensive gesture. It's just the epitome of my soul. And I must be me. We got spirit, y'all. We got spirit. We got soul, y'all. We got soul. They don't want us to see, but we already know.
play. What's up? Yeah. Yeah.
Kane is in the building, baby.
It's alright, already the show goes on all night. Till the morning we dream so long. Anybody ever wonder when they will see the sun? Just remember when you come up.
All on your soul and put whips up on your back. They be lying through they teeth. Hope you slip up off your path. I don't switch up, I just laugh. Put my kicks up on they desk, unaffected by they threats. Then get busy on. See, that's how that shit tell me, man. That's how my daddy raised me. That glittering may not be gold. Don't let nobody play me. If you are my homeboy, you never have to pay me. Go on and put your hands up. When times is hard, you stand up. LUP the man, cause a brand that the fans trust. So even if they ban, I still never slow my plans up. Two in the air for the father that's there. Three in the air for the kids in the ghetto. Four for the kids that don't wanna be there. None for trying to hold him back. Five in the air for the teacher not scared to tell those kids that's living in the ghetto that they're coming back, that the world is theirs. Yeah, yeah, the world is yours. I was once that little boy, terrified of the world. Now I'm on a world tour. I will give up everything, even start a world war for these ghetto girls and boys I'm rapping around the world for. Africa to New York, Haiti then I detour. Oakland out to Oakland, Gaza Strip to Detroit. Say hip hop only destroy. Tell them look at me, boy. I hope your son don't have a gun and never be a little boy. You've been through, no matter what you into, no matter what you see when you look outside your window. Brown grass or green grass, picket fence or barbed wire, never ever put them down. You just lift your arms higher, raise them till your arms tired. Let them know you there, that you struggling, surviving, that you gon' persevere. Yeah, ain't nobody leaving, nobody going home. Even if they turn the lights out, the show is going on.
This is SOS Radio. We just heard The Show Goes On by Lupe Fiasco. Before that was Free by Jill Scott. We also heard Tie My Hands by Lil Wayne. And we started the set off with Black Is by Fertile Ground. This is Ndaya Aziz for SOS Radio. According to figures from Afro-Mexico, the country was importing Africans as early as 1519, and they didn't just import a few. Mexico imported so many Africans to work in the silver mines, sugar plantations, and cattle ranches that by 1553, the black population soared to over 20,000. By 1570, Africans in Mexico outnumbered Spaniards by 3-1. Africans brought and preserved many of their traditions and cooking techniques. They were often given less desired cuts of meat, including shoulder and intestines.
menudo, for example, was derived from the habit of the Spaniards giving the slaves cow intestines. Slaves developed a way to clean the afal and season it to taste. Slaves in the southern United States also did the same thing to the pig's intestines given to them. In South America, scraps of food the landlord did not eat were mixed, creating new plates that nowadays have been adapted into the cuisine of their respective nation, such being the case with the Peruvians' taco taco. Mexican cuisine is known for its intense and varied flavors, colorful decoration, and variety of spices. Mexican culture and food is one of the richest in the world, both with respect to diverse and appealing taste and texture. And in terms of protein, vitamins, and minerals, most of today's Mexican cuisine is based on pre-Hispanic tradition, including the Aztecs, Maya, and the indigenous people of Mexico, combined with culinary trends introduced by enslaved Africans. This is Ajama Ikoto reporting for SOS Radio. Afro-Peruvian music has its roots in the communities of enslaved Africans brought to work in the mines along the Peruvian coast. As such, it's a long way from the Andes culturally and geographically. However, as it's developed particularly in the 20th century, it drew on Andean and Spanish as well as African traditions. The music was little known even in Peru until the 1950s when it was popularized by the seminal performer Nicomedes Santa Cruz, whose body of work was taken a step further in the 1970s by a group, Peru Negro, and then in 2002 by Peru Expresión. Internationally, this form of music has had recent international publicity through David Byrne's Luaca Bop label, issuing the compilation Peru Negro and solo albums from Susana Baca. This is Indaya Aziz reporting for SOS Radio.
I ain't on Lego. Oh yeah. I'm Severin Suzuki, speaking for ECHO, the Environmental Children's Organization. We're a group of 12 and 13-year-olds trying to make a difference. Vanessa Setti, Morgan Geisler, Michelle Quigg, and me. We've raised all the money to come here ourselves, to come 5,000 miles to tell you adults you must change your ways. Coming up here today, I have no hidden agenda. I am fighting for my future. Losing my future is not like losing an election or a few points on the stock market. I am here to speak for all generations to come. I am here to speak on behalf of the starving children around the world whose cries go unheard. I am here to speak for the countless animals dying across this planet because they have nowhere left to go. I am afraid to go out in the sun now because of the holes in our ozone. I am afraid to breathe the air because I don't know what chemicals are in it. I used to go fishing in Vancouver, my home, with my dad, until just a few years ago we found the fish full of cancers. And now we hear of animals and plants going extinct every day, vanishing forever. In my life, I have dreamt of seeing the great herds of wild animals, jungles and rainforests full of birds and butterflies. But now I wonder if they will even exist for my children to see. Did you have to worry of these things when you were my age? All this is happening before our eyes, and yet we act as if we have all the time we want and all the solution. I'm only a child, and I don't have all the solutions. But I want you to realize, neither do you. You don't know how to fix the holes in our ozone layer. You don't know how to bring the salmon back up in a dead stream. You don't know how to bring back an animal now extinct. And you can't bring back the forest that once grew where there is now a desert. If you don't know how to fix it, please stop breaking it. Here, you may be delegates of your government, business people, organizers, reporters, or politicians, but really, your mothers and fathers, sisters and brothers, aunts and uncles, and all of you are someone's child. I'm only a child, yet I know we are all part of a family, 5 billion strong, in fact, 30 million species strong, and borders and governments will never change that. I'm only a child, yet I know we are all in this together and should act as one single world towards one single goal. In my anger, I am not blind, and in my fear, I am not afraid of telling the world how I feel. In my country, we make so much waste. We buy and throw away, buy and throw away, buy and throw away, and yet northern countries will not share with the needy. Even when we have more than enough, we are afraid to share. We are afraid to let go of some of our wealth. In Canada, we live the privileged life with plenty of food, water, and shelter. We have watches, bicycles, computers, and television sets. The list could go on for 2 days. 2 days ago here in Brazil, we were shocked when we spent time with some children living on the streets. This is what one child told us. I wish I was rich. And if I were, I would give all the street children food, clothes, medicines, shelter, and love and affection. If a child on the streets who has nothing is willing to share, why are we who have everything still so greedy? I can't stop thinking that these are children my own age, that it makes a tremendous difference where you are born. That I could be one of those children living in the favelas of Rio. I could be a child starving in Somalia, or a victim of war in the Middle East, or a beggar in India. I am only a child, yet I know if all the money spent on war was spent on finding environmental answers, ending poverty, and finding treaties. What a wonderful place this earth would be. At school, even in kindergarten, you teach us how to behave in the world. You teach us to not fight with others, to work things out, to respect others, to clean up our mess, not to hurt other creatures, to share, not be greedy. Then why do you go out and do the things you tell us not to do? Do not forget why you are attending these conferences, who you're doing this for. We are your own children. You are deciding what kind of a world we are growing up in. Parents should be able to comfort their children by saying, everything's going to be all right. It's not the end of the world. And we're doing the best we can. But I don't think you can say that to us anymore. Are we even on your list of priorities? My dad always says, you are what you do, not what you say. Well, what you do makes me cry at night. You grown-ups say you love us. But I challenge you, please, make your actions reflect your words. Thank you.
Like a sauna, penetrating through your body armor. Rhythmically we massage ya with hip hop mixed up with samba. With samba, so yes, yes, y'all. You know we never stop, we never rest, y'all. The Black Eyed Peas will keep the funky fresh, y'all. And we won't stop until we get y'all, till we get y'all. Say it.
Oh, big peppers, but y'all rock rhymes. One, two, three, four, several times. Heavy rotation played by every kind. Radio station blessing every mind. We crossing boundaries like every day. New Wop and Bobby Bobby being the on the bay. We got tab magnification, tab magnified like every day.
So yes, yes, y'all. You know we never stop, we never rest, y'all. The black bees are keeping funky fresh, y'all. And we won't stop until we get y'all. Till we get y'all, say yeah. My daily operation. Gotta put in work in this crazy occupation. Gotta keep it moving.
That's the motivation.
Gotta ride the waves and keep a tight relation with my team. Keep it moving and doing it right. Up in the lab every day till daylight. That's the way things move in this monkey business.
We took an old samba song and remixed it.
SOS Radio, and under us, the sounds of Sergio Mendes and the Brazil 66, featuring Will I Am with Mas Que Nada. We had Sheun Kuti and Fela's Egypt 80 with the song Rise. Bob Marley, So Ya Sé, and Susana Baca, Se Me Van Los Pies. For SOS Radio, this is Mama Ayo and Kita Mayala, signing out. And today we're having a conversation with some of our students about a case, a topic that's in the news headlines everywhere. It's stirring up tensions amongst communities all across America. It's the story of Trayvon Martin, 17-year-old who was tragically shot by George Zimmerman February 26th of this year. So, class, what I'd like you to do first is just kind of introduce yourself and tell us your ages.
My name is Salima, and I'm 13.
My name is Ilana, and I'm 12.
My name is Ajama, and I'm 13.
My name is Indaya, and I'm 11.
My name is Shadu, and I'm 13.
My name is Oscar, and I'm 13.
So let's kind of just set the stage for everyone. It's All-Star Weekend. You know, Dwayne Wade is on TV, LeBron James. All these hot celebrities are playing basketball, and this young brother decides to take a walk to the corner store to pick up some snacks for he and his cousin. How many of you have done that before? Maybe halftime or in the middle of the day, decide you want a snack and run out to the store? I mean, is that something you do? A few of you do, a few of you don't. Certainly, he's 4 years older than most of you. He was 17 years old. So by that time, that could very much be a part of your reality. And I'm talking to you today as more than just your teacher, but I look at you as my sons and daughters. And frankly, this story has me scared, right? The young brother goes to the store. He purchases Skittles and iced tea. That's what everybody's saying. He had a bag of Skittles and an Arizona iced tea or peace tea. And is walking back to the house. It's raining outside, he feels the night chill. He puts the hood up over his head and he starts walking back to his father's house. As he's walking home, he perceives somebody looking at him, staring at him, following him. George Zimmerman, you know, casing him out. George Zimmerman puts in a call to 911 saying he sees somebody suspicious in the neighborhood. The 911 operator tells him to stand down, fall back. No, we don't need you to follow him. George Zimmerman follows him anyway. The only person who really knows the truth are the two people who were there that night. But what we do know is out of that situation, a 17-year-old unarmed young black man was shot and killed by George Zimmerman. So, you know, give me some of your initial thoughts and reactions on what happened.
Well, I think personally that since Zimmerman decided to shoot him, then he should eventually go to jail for like 10 years or so, because that's just a crime and that's murder.
I think that Zimmerman should at least go to jail, and I don't understand why he isn't in jail yet, and this has been about a month since this happened, and Troy Davis was executed because he was accused of killing somebody, and George Zimmerman is living his life. He was actually seen at a restaurant eating like a few weeks after this happened, and I think that he should at least be in jail.
I think George Zimmerman should be locked up for just killing a young black man, and I'm scared for other young black men these days because you just can get shot just like that, just in a snap. It's really sad.
I think that just for the fact that he killed a person, period, he should be in jail. I know he's under the Stand Your Ground law, but there's no proof that Martin was attacking him. So I believe that Zimmerman should be in jail.
I think that, if it was me, I would have ran into the woods because it's no way that you're gonna have a gun and it's at nighttime and it's raining. So if you have a gun, you can't catch me in the woods because it's nighttime and there's trees everywhere. So I think he should have ran into the bushes or something like that and then hid. And then, you know, if he was a bush boy, he could see, but...
We're talking about a young man walking home, and this is like, you know, a subdivision of townhomes and things like that. I don't know necessarily if the environment and the terrain allowed for someone to run in the bushes. I hear what you're saying. You would try to escape by all means necessary. Get away from this person with the gun. You know what I'm saying? I get that. But maybe that wasn't an option for him.
Well, I think George Zimmerman, something like that, should go to jail for life.
That was another question I wanted to ask you guys, because I heard some people say 10 years. Some of you were saying, well, he should at least be in jail right now. I wanted some clarity on why you thought 10 years, because certainly Trayvon Martin was cut down at 17. It means he doesn't have the rest of his life to live, to continue his education, to be married, to have children. So what is the consequence for that?
The consequence is, I want to change that 10 years. I want to say for life like Biggie did, because Trayvon Martin, he didn't even get to live his life to the fullest like he might have wanted to, because he got murdered at the age of 17 years old. So Zimmerman should pay for that in jail for life, for the rest of his life.
I think he should, go to jail for life. Eventually, he wouldn't stay alive that long, but I think he should go to jail for life for killing somebody that was innocent and that didn't do anything.
I have another question. What does this case bring up for you as far as the value of black life? You know, because we've seen the news headlines and certainly we've talked about it, and not just black life, any person of color in this country who is killed. You know, how much are their lives valued, our lives valued? Are they valued as much as, say, a white citizen of the United States?
No, I don't think that black life is really valued in America because you could just kill a black person and no one would care. But if you kill a white person, some black person is going to go to jail for either life or execution.
I don't think black life is valued either because, like, Ye just said and things.
I don't think black life is valued because in the past, black life has been hard in America, like slavery and everything. And like Caucasians, they've all been like the main priority. And we've been like, if we get murdered, then nothing's going to happen. Like we used to get lynched back in slave days and like nobody would really stop that, like the government.
Askari and Chinedu, can y'all elaborate on that? Because I mean, I think that this certainly should go to the heart of the life that you're living now, because you are young black men and you're 13, so y'all are right on the cusp of crossing over where people won't even see you as a child anymore. Your facial hair come in, your muscles are gonna come in. You're gonna begin to look intimidating to, you know, the larger society. So as you walk the streets and ride your skateboards and your bikes and hang out with your friends outside of the sight of your parents and community members, you become a threat, you know? So can you say more about the value of black life and what it means to be a young black man?
Well, for me, since I skateboard like everywhere where it's like nice grounds and stairs, and a lot of security guards are like mostly white, so they'll tell me to get off their property or they'll call the cops, and I get scared sometimes.
What are you afraid of?
I feel like since I'm black and I'm the only skater that's around, they'll try to accuse me of doing something. Or they'll tell the cops, like, I cussed them out or something like that.
Well, I'm 13, and I feel like I ride bikes around my neighborhood. I work with my dad. When we go places, my dad say, oh, well, knock on their door. I'm scared because, you know, most of the people we go to is white. So I'm scared that I might be a threat to them if I come to the door with a gun and stuff. I ride bikes around my neighborhood, other people's neighborhood. You know, some people say, I don't want you around here because you don't have no helmet. I'm like, you know, you're not a boss to me, you're not my dad.
Sisters, do y'all have anything to say? Do you think that the threat is as real for you as it is for young black males? I mean, are you as afraid of how you are perceived?
Well, I'm not that afraid. I mean, I think black women in this society are treated a certain way, but not into the extreme of black men.
I am kind of scared, but I believe that more black males are being killed than females. So I'm more afraid for the black males that I know, like for my brothers or cousins or friends or people like that.
What about your fathers?
Yeah, you know, our fathers are grown, so they can take it to a certain level and it can just be off the charts.
What does that mean?
Like, if they accuse any of our fathers of doing something wrong, they can be killed because they're really harsh in America about their punishments, even if it's not that serious.
I don't think that women are being killed like men because women don't look threatening.
So let's kind of clarify what we're talking about, because in the case of Trayvon Martin, this is a citizen who's on a community watch team. He's not necessarily a police, But when I hear you talking, it reminds me of the countless police brutality situations that we've come to know about, and even some of the police-involved shootings that have happened often. Just on this program, we've talked about Ariston Waiters, you know, and how he was shot in the back by a police officer. Can we talk a little bit about police brutality and racial profiling?
Well, police brutality, like, it happened in the past, like with Martin Luther King and the marches and the dogs and the water hoses and all of that and things like that.
I think that there still is police brutality, and they're mostly looking for young black men. But if it was the other way around, like if a black person accused or disrespected a policeman, or maybe a white policeman, they would probably be put in jail, or they would be killed, or something like that, yeah.
I think police brutality still is going on because most of these things that are going on right now happen because of police brutality or because someone called the police and the police didn't do anything. Someone took the matter into their own hands.
I think police brutality is still going on, but mainly on black young brothers and people getting shot or executed for something they didn't do. And the police are just living their lives while somebody's son or dad is dead.
You know, vigilantism is something that's been tossed around a lot with the George Zimmerman case. Because here you have an individual who decided to take things into his own hands. Or maybe even to carry out a mission in his own mind. Because what you hear on the 911 call is him saying, they always get away. News reports have even said that you can hear the word coon, which is a derogatory term that people have used to describe black people, African people in this country. You know, is it a hate crime? Was George Zimmerman a vigilante? What are your perspectives?
I think that for Zimmerman to say things like coon or they always get away with things, it's like saying, it's going back to old times when they used to do things to make us feel little about ourselves, like take our culture away from us and say that we don't do this, we don't have that, we are stupid, we're dumb, and we act like monkeys in the zoo.
I know this is a hate crime. I mean, it should be charged as a hate crime and a murder at the same time, so he should definitely be in jail. Well, at least in jail. Yeah.
How do you know it's a hate crime, Ilana?
Because of the names that he was calling Trayvon and how he was saying that Trayvon Martin looked suspicious, and that is why he followed him.
Yeah, and that's racial profiling, right? Simply because he's a black and African male, he looks suspicious. Never mind that he actually lives in the neighborhood, you know? If a young white male were walking at that same time from that same store with the same items in his hand, the same hoodie on his head, would George Zimmerman have said he was suspicious?
Nope. I think this was a hate crime because Zimmerman, he's Latino and white. I don't know, he's mixed. But for him to, he might have been brought up like that to think little of African Americans, but I don't think that he should have did all what he did. Like, it was not necessary at all.
I think it was a hate crime because he just went and shot down somebody he saw with a hoodie for no reason, and it was unnecessary. I could understand if he was, like, I don't know, throwing up gang signs or something, but he was just walking down the street, going home with some Skittles and some tea.
Many of our leaders, a lot of community leaders, are comparing the Trayvon Martin case to Emmett Till. We know historically that Emmett Till's murder sparked a fire in the civil rights movement. You have so many young people saying, this is not going to happen anymore. We've had enough of the murder of our young by vigilante white folks, lynch mobs, and things like that. How does Trayvon Martin's case compare to Emmett Till? And what have you seen in national media to suggest that people have had enough and they're ready to fight back?
I think they're both similar cases because they're both black. And both of them were attacked for very little things that they have not really did for things that weren't serious.
Well, Trayvon Martin was killed for nothing, you know. And Emmett Till, even that situation was something that they accused him of doing that was never even proven. It never saw a judge or a jury or had a lawyer to defend his side of it. So what I'm asking you is, young people got fired up about Emmett Till. Are you seeing in the media, in your own communities, in your own families, within yourself, are you getting fired up about Trayvon Martin in this situation?
Yes. I think both situations would encourage us to like go out and protest and fight for our young people's rights, and possibly it might spark the Black Panther movement again.
I believe that these are both hate crimes. Emmett Till, what he did, there was no proof that he actually whistled at a white woman. And if he did, he wasn't doing it, wait 1 second, please turn it off.
And lastly, Quilombo scholars, a word for the Trayvon Martin family. You know, certainly they are going through the unimaginable right now. For myself, I want to send out all of my love and support, my condolences to his mother. I can't imagine what it is to be in your position. I have a son, and for his life to be taken, you know, would be a crime beyond imagination. So my heart goes out to you. We, Quilombo, stand in solidarity with your family, and I hope justice is served.
Well, I have to say for the parents, just keep strong and justice will come for your son soon.
What I have to say for the Trayvon family is I'm really sorry. And I know you must be really sad and more mad because Trayvon's murderer is not in jail yet. But I'm sure Trayvon will have justice soon.
What I have to say is that hopefully when Zimmerman is in jail or serving a life sentence, y'all will feel so much better, and I send my heart out to you.
My name is Ayo Nkitamayala, and for Quilombo Academic and Cultural Institute, we're signing out.
If they want to knock your head, now from back, yo. If they want to knock your head, now from back, yo. If you want to run, be running. Now from back, yo. If you want to run, be running. Now from back.
This program has been sponsored by First African Church, the First African Community Development Corporation, the Davis Bozeman Law Firm, the Malcolm X Grassroots Movement, and the New African People's Organization. Thank you on behalf of the Quilombo Academic and Cultural Institute staff, the Quilombo International Network, and brothers and sisters like you. Asante Sana, Madasi, and Modupuy.